actually the policy chair of the law section, so I want to highlight the law section. This is a law section presentation, and we're delighted to see what is maybe a mix, I don't know, of law, non-law. I just know a couple of people here of different backgrounds. So I'm going to be speaking. I'm at NYU's College of Global Public Health, and I'm going to be speaking about the SNAP program. My presentation is a little bit more controversial than the other two. So thank you to Robert Wood Johnson. I have nothing to disclose. And also I want to thank my co-author, Jamie Shariki. She's at the University of Illinois in Chicago. So SNAP was mentioned earlier, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. It's the new name for what used to be called the Food Stamps Program. In 2008, Congress renamed the program SNAP. The purpose of the program is to raise nutrition levels of low-income households to alleviate hunger and malnutrition, to allow recipients to obtain a more nutritious diet. The way it works is that it's a transfer of funds onto an EBT card, which is similar to a debit card, and recipients can use that to purchase pretty much any food or beverage in the supermarket, except for pre-prepared foods and hot foods, but any other kind of food or beverage. The USDA is the agency that works with states to carry out the program, and states can only act within the federal guidelines, so they can't vary program requirements such as what types of foods are permissible to be purchased. There is a substantial amount of research that shows that adult and child SNAP recipients have a different diet quality than low-income non-participants and also income-eligible non-participants. Studies show that NHANES, which are nationally representative studies, show that SNAP participants drink more sugary beverages, fruit juice, more foods with added sugar, more processed meats, red meat, and potatoes, and fewer vegetables, fruits, seafood, nuts, seeds, legumes, and whole grains. And then smaller studies that look at a particular population or groups of people who are just starting the program have found similar results with sugary beverages, refined grain sweets, and desserts. SNAP was conservatively estimated to pay about $2 billion a year for sugary beverages in grocery stores alone, so that's not including convenience stores and other smaller bodega type of stores. So there's been a national debate about whether we should change the SNAP program to have nutrition guidelines, and so that's what the rest of my talk is about. There has been public support for restructuring the program. In a survey of a few thousand people, 69% of the public and 54% of SNAP recipients supported removing sugary beverages. In a survey of about 500 SNAP stakeholders, so people who worked on SNAP or received SNAP benefits or other jobs having to do with SNAP, 75% agreed with removing soda or foods of low nutritional value, such as fruit drinks and candy. And also that amount of people also agreed with the idea of aligning SNAP guidelines with the USDA's dietary guidelines for Americans. 54% would define the SNAP package similar to WIC, which I'll be talking about in a little bit, but that's the Women, Infant, Children program, which is a federal program for women, infants, and children. Food security groups would strongly oppose these changes, so they do not agree with those surveys. They say that it's stigmatizing to SNAP recipients that they can make their own decisions and they don't need the government to tell them what to eat or not to purchase. They're also concerned about the maintenance of the benefit amounts, because any type of cut to SNAP would be concerning that people want to cut the actual benefit amount. And they also argue that most Americans don't follow the dietary guidelines for Americans, so why should SNAP recipients have to follow them? Policymakers have suggested or tried to suggest that SNAP to pilot a program. So Minnesota asked the USDA to pilot a program allowing for soft drinks and taxable candy to be removed, and New York City tried to do the same with sugary beverages. The USDA said no to both of these requests. Senators Harkin and Coburn tried to enact an amendment to the Farm Bill, the most recent Farm Bill, asking for the USDA to allow demonstration projects in two states, again, to try to just see if that would work in small locations. Again, and also to model that after the Dietary Guidelines for Americans. That amendment did not pass, so then they asked the USDA to allow it through a letter. They wrote a letter to the USDA, and the USDA said no. And then the scientific report for the 2015 Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee also suggested a pilot program and then potentially changes similar to those for WIC or align the SNAP program with the Dietary Guidelines for Americans. So the USDA has said no to all such requests. They echo what the hunger groups say, and they also say that there's no evidence that SNAP recipients have a worse dietary quality, although I would disagree with that, as I showed you the science earlier. But there are studies that don't agree with that. But the main response that I'm tackling with my project and the paper is that they said that restrictions would pose a substantial implementation challenge due to the task of identifying, evaluating, and tracking foods. And so I would argue that's actually not a barrier to changing SNAP by putting nutrition guidelines. And so here are some reasons. I reviewed legislative bills from states across the country that were talking about amending SNAP in one of these ways, and they were saying that we would want to eliminate eligibility for unhealthy food products, and they had different reasons. They were calling them non-food items, and several bills specified the food items that they would try to remove, and it's basically every type of sugary beverage you can think of, and then also ice cream, chips, snacks, and cookies were in the bills. So none of these passed, but even if they did, they would still need to request the change from the USDA. They couldn't unilaterally do it. But this does indicate that the legislators who are proposing these bills don't think that there's an administrative burden to doing this. But there's also factual basis to suggest that there's not. States have food tax laws, which do specifically designate certain foods for taxation or not. So they've already made definitions and chosen which foods to tax, and these are in effect right now. These laws are based on non-necessity and necessity products. It's not based on health. So 13 states tax all food, and then this number of states have disfavored tax status for certain foods. So 23 states have disfavored tax status for sugary beverages, 18 have it for candy, 15 states for gum, 4 states for ice cream, and 2 states for popsicles. And 2 states previously had a tax on snack foods, but they repealed those laws. But all of these required certain designation, definitions, and determining which foods to tax. So SNAP is administered at the state and local level. SNAP recipients do not pay sales taxes on their benefits. And as I mentioned, they use an EBT card that's similar to a debit card. And an electronic scanning system is in the larger grocery stores, all those supermarkets and larger grocery stores, which automatically tells the debit card whether it's a SNAP purchase or not. And then it doesn't put on the tax and also then is deducted from the EBT card. 84% of benefits nationally are redeemed at large supermarkets. All of these have electronic scanning systems. A small store without an electronic scanning system would have to hand separate. Their very small amount of benefits are solely redeemed at these types of stores. 0.6 are solely redeemed at convenience stores, and 1% at small grocery stores, which still could have the ability to do this. Then also I'd like to mention that the Farm Bill put in some new requirements for retailers that will likely start to phase out the smaller retailers, because there's a higher requirement for perishable food items that smaller retailers will not likely be able to meet. So I would argue that restrictions would not pose a substantial implementation challenge, and that the federal and state governments have done this before for food taxes and then also for WIC. And WIC is primarily for children under five, infants and mothers and pregnant women, but SNAP is still the largest child feeding program in our country. And SNAP is administratively less complex than WIC. So WIC still uses stamps, and this is an example from West Virginia, that some states have moved to an EBT card for WIC as well, but it's not a nationally required item yet. So a person would have to understand the rules. They look at their voucher, and they know which goes with which product. They have specific requirements based on age of the child. It depends on which fat content of the milk is, for example. And then you have to match your voucher with the product and then bring it up and have the store administratively deal with it. There are other requirements like the type of mackerel fish you buy, king mackerel versus Spanish mackerel. One is covered, one is not. So it's much more administratively complex than SNAP. And here's another example about you can't buy 2 half-gallons. You have to buy the whole, I don't know what quart, a gallon. I'm sorry. I'm a little jet lagged. So I would argue that a pilot program would be the purpose to evaluate the concerns of the USDA and the hunger organizations that oppose this. And I would start with the sugary beverages, since it's pretty much a very widely accepted product that's unhealthy, whereas there are variations of ideas for different types of foods. Non-sugary beverages are not permitted to be purchased with WIC benefits. They're the subject of disfavorable tax status of the highest amount of the states, and they're mentioned in the bills that explicitly mention food for waivers from the USDA. So in conclusion, federal and state governments regularly differentiate among foods and successfully administer these for both of those programs. And then if they were to do a more permanent change, of course we would want a much more strenuous rulemaking process, which would get the comments of stakeholders and the public in order to create precise definitions and reflect the best science. So because the USDA and the hunger groups did not oppose the changes that recently went on for WIC to increase the nutrition standards, I would argue that there's really not enough difference of the populations to say that one's okay, but SNAP is not okay to have the nutrition standards. So thank you. I'm going to run out after we're done, so if anybody wants to email me, here's my email address. Thank you very much.